Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're of course going to be talking about Wall Street's reaction to Tesla's third quarter delivery and production report over the weekend. We've got a whole host of analyst updates, as well as other things going on in the market to discuss. We've also got an update from NHTSA, news in Tesla's lawsuit against Rivian, and a couple other items. So we'll start off with the stock. Probably not the start to the week that people had hoped for from the stock after Tesla beat delivery expectations by about 9% with the report this weekend. Tesla stock finishing up just 0.8% to $781.53 after briefly passing $800 per share this morning, hitting a high of about $807 or so before falling back for most of the rest of the day. But what we have to consider here is obviously the performance of the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ having its 11th worst day of the year today, finishing down 2.1% on the day. So that's actually a bottom sixth percentile day. And the NASDAQ finished quite a bit below the S&P and the Dow. So just a rough day in general for growth stocks, Tesla being dragged down by that macro environment. So the 0.8% gain by itself, not all that exciting, but pretty strong relative performance. It's clear that there was generally a positive reaction to the Q3 report. This has been a continuation of overperformance that we've seen from Tesla for about the last month or so. Tesla now up 7% year to date, and actually catching up with the NASDAQ, the NASDAQ's up 12%. So a couple more days like this, Tesla could actually start outperforming for the year. If you're curious, the S&P 500 is still up 16% year to date. A couple of quick things that I do want to mention with the macro just while we're on the topic. So it's been a little bit since we've talked about the infrastructure bill. There have been a couple updates there, or more specifically, the infrastructure bill and the budget reconciliation plan, both of those things Democrats hoping to do in tandem. So on the budget reconciliation plan, which is the $3.5 trillion framework, as we have talked about before, within the Democrats, there has been some pushback on that high of spending, and it looks like that pushback will be successful to some extent. The discussion now seems to be more in the $2 trillion range. Obviously, a reduction like that could significantly impact the structure or even inclusion of a revision to the U.S. federal EV tax credit, so we'll have to watch for any updates on that front. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer saying today that they do hope to have these things through approval by the end of October, so hopefully we'll have some more information soon. The other thing that I guess we can just kind of throw into the macro bucket here is that Facebook and their services have been down for a significant chunk of today. Might also be affecting the markets a little bit. I'm sure by the time this episode is out, there will probably be fresher information, but Facebook's CTO updating on Twitter, which I kind of find humorous, but saying that, quote, "We are experiencing networking issues and teams are working as fast as possible to debug and restore as fast as possible," end quote. So we'll see what happens there and if that becomes anything bigger. Before we do move into the Tesla news then, I did just want to take a quick peek at the calendar because this is a pretty big week. Obviously, we're going to have continued reaction to the delivery report, but then on Thursday, October 7th, we've got the shareholder meeting from Austin. Maybe we get a Giga Texas update there, who knows, a little bit more on Austin later. But kind of another interesting note there is that Tesla, as many people noted with the Q3 delivery report, put Austin, Texas as the location of that release. Normally, it's Palo Alto. So kind of interesting to see that, but either way with the shareholder meeting, usually good for at least some new information. So anyway, that's the 7th, and then on Friday, October 8th, overnight, we're supposed to get FSD Beta 10.2 and start the FSD Beta rollout, which I wouldn't really view as a short-term catalyst. It probably carries more headline risk than anything, but still exciting for us. Then Saturday, October 9th, Tesla has the Berlin Gigafest where they're having public tours, so maybe we'll get some interesting info out of that. So big 3 days there later this week, and then of course, likely 3 weeks from today, we should have Tesla's Q3 earnings report. So lots to look forward to, but now let's get into the news. So I did want to quickly cover analyst updates. We've had quite a few of them since the delivery report. These should be pretty quick hitters, not too much in-depth analysis to share. First here is Goldman Sachs. I think they kind of captured the essence of the general reaction pretty well. So they reiterated their buy rating, $875 price target, and they say, quote, "Deliveries were above published consensus estimates and also above investor expectations in our view," end quote. Adding that, quote, "We believe the strong third quarter preliminary results indicate likely upside to our full year estimate of 866,000 deliveries and in turn our 2021 earnings per share estimate," end quote. So basically, yep, beat our forecast and yep, we got to go ahead and update our estimates. So check, check. Also increasing their estimate was JP Morgan's Ryan Brinkman. I always kind of have a smile on my face when we talk about these estimates. Their price target has increased from $180 per share all the way up to $215 per share. They say, quote, "We are raising our third quarter and full year 2021 estimates to account for stronger than expected third quarter global deliveries of 241,300, soundly better than company compiled consensus of 221,952, and our own estimate of 208,500, end quote. Obviously, with that price target, they still have an underweight rating, and they actually lowered their 2022 earnings per share with this note to $6.50. Bad estimate, but fair reason. They said it was because of the Cybertruck being pushed out. They did actually raise their 2023 earnings estimates, but if you look at that $6.50 and their $215 price target, I guess apparently they think that Tesla should be trading at 34 times earnings, which would be kind of smack dab in the middle between Apple and Amazon, despite growing way, way, way faster than both. A few other quick ones here that didn't have a whole lot to say in their notes. So CFRA, they've reiterated their hold rating, $675 price target. Don't think any change there. RBC Capital reiterated sector perform rating. They did increase their price target marginally from $745 to $755. KGI, sort of a similar increase. They reiterated outperform, raised their price target from $855 to $867. They also raised their 2021 delivery estimate to $874,500. Then Cohen, another small increase up from $562 price target to $580. Generally, their note was positive, but they did say, quote, "We highlight Tesla's decreasing sales in China amid severe competition from local producers and lingering bad press from accidents/incidents/lawsuits, end quote. Which I just read because if in a few days when we end up getting the CPCA reports for domestic sales in China for September, and if those do end up being 52,000 as rumored, then, as we had talked about, that would actually be quarter-over-quarter growth for Tesla in China domestically and would make this statement no longer true. All right, and then last analyst note here, this is from Morgan Stanley, so Adam Jonas, and this one actually has a little bit of content to talk about, and Elon did comment on it as well, the title of the note being, "How did Tesla find chips?" So Elon replied to a Teslarati article about this, saying, quote, "This was extremely difficult. Huge props to Tesla engineering, supply chain, production, and key suppliers," end quote. And Elon using asterisks there to highlight extremely difficult. Between this tweet and the amount of time that Elon Musk spent talking about supply chain challenges on the Q2 earnings call, if you still think legacy automakers are just making up this chip shortage, I mean, yeah, I've shared my thoughts on this quite a few times. It's clearly a huge issue industry-wide. Thankfully, Tesla is relatively well-equipped to work through it. So that's the premise of Jonas's note here. He highlights four reasons for Tesla's relative success, first being vertical integration. Quote, "Tesla is arguably the most vertically integrated OEM in the world, giving it an earlier opportunity to identify and mitigate supply chain distributions. Tesla's ownership of the retail channel helps eliminate waste and ensures more available vehicles get to their owners without intermediary price hikes," end quote. So I would agree with that, and then I would also kind of add something that Jonas sort of hints at in his next point, which is sophistication. I think between the two, Tesla just has more capability of being flexible, which is something Tesla specifically noted back as early as the Q1 earnings report in regards to chip shortages. And then also I would add on sophistication, like we talked about with the comments from Intel CEO and Qualcomm's president of Europe, Tesla is using newer chips in general. Chip makers are much more willing to reinvest in that to get production up to where it needs to be versus older chips that other automakers want and have trouble or even inability to adapt to if they can't get them. Third, Jonas highlights negotiation. Quote, "Discussions with suppliers suggest that Tesla's culture is more ambitious than that of other OEMs while remaining collaborative. Tesla's ability to further insource technology keeps suppliers on their toes," end quote. And then I would add with negotiation, you also have to consider the fact that other OEMs were reported to have canceled orders versus Tesla probably never did. That difference will certainly help a lot in negotiation. And then finally, Jonas lists scale, saying, quote, "Tesla is relatively smaller scale than other legacy OEMs, partially mitigating the scope of supply tightness. At the same time, many suppliers believe Tesla is on its way to becoming a dominant OEM with a multiple of the annual volume that it has today. Despite its modest size, most suppliers consider Tesla a strategic customer," end quote. So in general, I agree with all those and then those couple of additions I already said, but all this kind of leaves out one of the most important factors, and that is how these businesses relatively were originally planned. Tesla's obviously been planning for big growth versus other automakers are only going to plan for marginal growth, and the differences in those plans will make the impact of any shortage look a lot different. Quick, simple example here. Let's say two businesses. One, business A, sold 950 units in 2020. They want to plan 5% growth up to 1,000 units for 2021 versus business B, which sold 100 units in 2020 and planned to grow to 200 units in 2021, so 100% growth year over year. If all of a sudden you introduce a 30% supply constraint on those plans, well, business A loses 30% of their 1,000 planned units. They end up with 700, which is actually going to be down 26% year over year. Versus business B, if they're hit with the same 30% supply constraint, that's 60 units of their 200-unit plan So their actual sales come in at 140. So sales end up 40% versus business A down 26%, even though both had the same supply constraint. So if we consider how this applies to Tesla, Tesla originally planned for quite a bit more growth during this period than what was actualized, because Berlin was supposed to be in production already, Texas was supposed to be in production already, and the Model S and X were probably supposed to be fully ramped up to 20,000-25,000 per quarter by now. So Tesla originally was probably telling the supply chain to be ready for 275,000, 300,000 units this quarter versus what they ended up actually being able to produce of 237,000. That higher original plan is going to help offset any impact of any part shortages. Companies like GM, Ford, etc., they would have never planned for much growth. So the impact of a shortage is more obvious, more easily determined than for a company like Tesla, where we're not actually sure what those original supply plans would have looked like. So that makes a huge difference in relative performance, and then you have to go in and layer in all those other reasons that we talked about for why Tesla is able to better navigate through this. All right, moving on, next we've got an update on a NHTSA review of Tesla fires. There were three that happened in quick succession in China back in 2019. It was requested by a lawyer in California on behalf of Tesla owners that NHTSA should investigate whether a recall was needed by Tesla because of this. And NHTSA has now announced that they have rejected that petition and that they don't see any need for an investigation. Quote, Tesla's investigation of the non-crash fires in China did not identify a root cause or positively link the incidents to any design or manufacturing defect conditions. Adding, quote, the available data indicate that non-crash battery fires in Tesla vehicles are rare events, end quote. So hey, a win for data and a win for Tesla. You love to see it. Where Tesla would like to see a little bit of legal action occur is in their case against Rivian. So we've talked about this lawsuit before. Tesla opened this up 14 months ago, claiming that Rivian had poached employees, stolen intellectual property. Elon around the time explained the lawsuit very succinctly, saying, quote, they were doing bad things, so we sued them, end quote. That lawsuit is still ongoing, and Tesla last month filed to amend that to add new complaints to the case. Rivian then contested those new additions. The judge denied that contest, so those new complaints can be heard. Tesla is arguing that even since filing suit, Rivian has continued to try to steal intellectual property, including battery technology. And although Rivian didn't reply to Bloomberg's request for comment, they did say in a filing, quote, for several of its trade secrets, it has provided so little detail that Rivian is unable to ascertain what Tesla is claiming as its intellectual property, let alone whether what it is claiming is or could be secret, end quote. So we'll see what transpires here. I think one of the common questions is, didn't Tesla open up their patents? Yes, Tesla did, but for use in good faith. And Tesla obviously feels like there's been some wrongdoing here by Rivian, which we had covered some of the details of back in that first episode. So check that out if you want more information. All right, last couple of things here. The first is firmly in the rumor mill category, and I usually am pretty hesitant to share these things. So I'll just put the appropriate caution flags around it. And originally I was just going to read this post from the Tesla Motors Club forum that I'm referring to here, but realized it's probably not the best idea because there is some identifying information in there. Anyway, the post was from a member saying that they had stopped to charge their Model Y in Austin, during which time they struck up a conversation with someone that turned out to be a Tesla employee, and apparently that person told them that Tesla is testing a few different volume output lines of Model Y in Austin right now, and other portions of the factory are running now as well. And apparently there's a whole lot more going on than we realize. And this person said, I hope you're well invested. He also said that apparently things are going extremely well around the factory. So it's exciting. You have to consider the context, though, that a whole lot more than we realize might not consider the context of how closely this group and the group on TMC follows Tesla. So I wouldn't put a ton of weight in that comment. And then for the various different Model Y lines, we already know that Tesla is working on a backup plan in case 4680 isn't ready. So that could explain that, but overall, just seems like this person is very positive on the progress, and I think that in and of itself is exciting. Last item then, as we had previously noted, Idra Group, which is the company that makes Tesla's gigapresses, are doing sort of a little docu-series on these casting machines and really how they came to be. So we had talked before about the trailer, and then the first episode was released today. Looks like this will be a 5-part series, and I was a little bit surprised the first video here was only about 6 minutes long, so it's a super quick watch. Just search for Idra Gigapress if you want to find it. I'm sure it'll come up right away. But they went through just kind of the ideation process of creating these really large casting machines and what they were trying to accomplish with them. And they didn't really mention anything in terms of collaboration with Tesla, really just trying to make a better Gigapress for their customers. So it's not clear exactly how much Tesla would have been involved in that, but obviously just being a quick adopter of this, even if it wasn't necessarily Tesla pushing the supplier in that direction, is still an important and also very difficult thing for automakers to do. Now, to be fair, I don't think Idra in their other videos have explicitly mentioned Tesla, so there might just be something there that they don't want to say the name overtly. But hopefully in subsequent episodes, we'll get a little bit more insight into that relationship. Either way, still interesting to check out, and how could you not love listening to Idra Group's general manager talk? He's just got a great way of speaking. Probably the only other interesting thing that I picked up from that is that they talked about the actual design of the GigaPress and how it looked, which kind of struck me a little bit because generally for, you know, heavy equipment manufacturers, that's pretty low, if not at all, on the list of things to consider. And maybe it's not all that important, but sometimes those little details can make a surprising difference. So anyway, that is it for today. A lot to look forward to the rest of the week, though. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, October 5th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.